Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Thursday, March the 14th. And welcome to our commentary. Just a quick heads up. Tonight on the podcast, meaning on the audio side, the podcast that we do at Blog Talk Radio, we're going to be talking to Barry Castleman. Barry is also known as the Prairie Editor. He writes a lot of good stuff about politics on his website. And we're going to be talking tonight about the Senate elections. We do this with him from time to time. We take a look at the Senate, the prospects for the U.S. Senate in the fall. Or so, you know, check us out. I'll put it up on my website as well as Twitter and on my blog and so on as soon as we record it. So it'll be available tonight. So check it out. I think you're going to enjoy it a great deal. We're going to go through all of the different possibilities in the U.S. Senate. Very important because, as you know, it is the Senate that makes a lot of tough decisions like judges. And the Senate is sort of, you know, the firewall, if you will, to what comes out of the House. So, you know, if you have the Senate, you have a lot of power in the federal government. And right now, it's kind of leaning Republican, but, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. The problem is that many of the states have not actually nominated their candidates yet. So that's why the polling data at this point is somewhat insignificant. But one election that we do know something about is the one here in Texas for the U.S. Senate, because our Senator Ted Cruz is running for re-election, and he's going to be running against Congressman Colin Allred. Congressman Allred is from the Dallas area, and they're going to be running for the U.S. Senate seat here in Texas. Now, the polls that I've seen, I've only seen three polls for this election. One had it 42-40 Cruz. The other one had Cruz plus 8, and the other one had Cruz plus 14. So, you know, it's a little bit difficult to analyze which one of those three is the one. So somewhere plus 2, plus 8, plus 14, take your pick, and that'll be what happens. But there are a couple of things, you know, we don't want to dwell too much on numbers, but there are a couple of things that we want to just talk about. We talked about this, wrote a post about this, actually, about a week ago after Super Tuesday. Number one, if you look at the turnout in Texas, the turnout in Texas was not very good for the Democrats. You had roughly 2 million plus Republicans show up, less than a million Democrats show up. Specifically, Senator Cruz got almost 2 million votes in his primary, and he was running, I mean, I didn't even know who he was running against. On the other side, there was a little bit more competitive of a race. Representative Allred was running against State Senator Gutierrez, and that was, you know, that was a primary that did get a lot of publicity. So despite having a somewhat interesting primary, you know, Congressman Allred got like 600,000 votes and Senator Cruz got almost 2 million in their respective primaries. So that's a big gap in turnout. What that means in November, it's not always complete information. But all I can tell you is this. In 2018, when Ted Cruz was reelected, he got 4.5 million votes. So that means that if Colin Allred wants to beat Ted Cruz, he's going to have to get around 4.5 million votes, maybe more. So can he get that in Texas? That's going to be a tough question. We will see more, I guess, as the campaign goes on. But right now, I don't think he can, which is why I believe that Senator Cruz is going to win that seat by about 5 to 7 points. Not going to be a blowout like Governor Abbott over Beto O'Rourke or, you know, Senator Cornyn over his opponent a few years ago. It's going to be a little closer. It's going to be in the 5 to 7 point range. And the reason I say that is because there's going to be a pretty heavy turnout, Republican turnout in the fall. And a lot of that has to do with President Trump. He's going to be on the ticket. So Trump is going to be at the top of the ticket and then Senator Cruz behind him. That's different than back in 2018 when it was Ted Cruz at the top of the ticket. And then, of course, Governor Abbott. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But I do favor the reelection of Senator Cruz at the moment. What that means for the U.S. Senate is that right now it's 51-49, and you have West Virginia. Of course, that's going to go Republican, so that brings you down to 50-50. And then you have others like Montana, Ohio, where there could be a flip, meaning the Republicans would then have 52, Ohio and Montana. There's also a super interesting race in Maryland. Now, that has sort of come out of nowhere. Maryland was expected to be a Democrat retention, but now you have former Governor Hogan, who's running for election there for the U.S. Senate, and that changes everything, because Governor Hogan is one very popular Republican in a very Democrat state. He won two elections running for governor, and he did fairly well in both. So that could be a flip. We don't know. But if that were to flip to the Republicans, that would be a real shocker. But I wouldn't be shocked, again, because it's Larry Hogan. Larry Hogan was a very popular Republican governor there. So we will see. But listen to our podcast with Barry Castleman, and we'll go over in more detail the different contests. Well, by now everybody knows there was a presentation before the House yesterday from Special Counsel Hur, and the presentation was reporting on the Biden document report. He conducted an investigation. I think it's pretty clear that he said that President Biden was in violation of many, many rules, including having documents from when he was a senator. I mean, that is pretty bad. How he got those documents home is beyond me as a senator. So we may also, I just want to add this, I think we may have to review that agency that keeps track of these documents, because it seems to me that there's too many documents are missing, and they need to be a little bit more alert. You have to wonder, for example, how many documents Obama has or Bush has, or even Bill Clinton. How many documents do they have? I don't know. I'm not saying they do, but it's just kind of crazy how all these presidents are having documents. But the problem for the Democrats, and the reason why this situation with Special Counsel Hur and the Biden documents, it pretty much kills any possibility of President Trump being indicted over documents, because I just don't believe the country would support it. I mean, just think about this. We've had three elections, 2016, 2020, and now 2024 coming up. Three people have run in these three elections: Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Donald Trump. All three have a document problem, but the only one who's apparently going to get indicted is Donald Trump. That's not going to fly. Politically, that's just simply not going to fly. There's no way that the American people are going to sit there and say, okay, it's okay for Hillary Clinton not to respect the document rules. It's okay for Joe Biden because he's an old man with bad memory, but that fellow Trump, we got to put him in jail. No, that's just not going to fly. That is simply not going to fly. And that's the problem. So that's why I don't see at this point how they can convict Donald Trump on the basis of those documents. In fact, if I were the attorney general, I would call Jack Smith, the special counsel, and say, Jack, drop this case. Let's just drop it. Let's just drop it, because it's not in the best interest of the country to go through all of this. Just a quick reminder, I have a post over at the American Thinker regarding George Stephanopoulos of ABC News and Representative Nancy Mace. You may remember the last Sunday, Nancy Mace was invited on his show, and then they got into it over the fact that Nancy Mace was endorsing President Trump, and Stephanopoulos came out saying, how dare you do that? This is a man who's been convicted of rape and all this kind of stuff. Well, first of all, Stephanopoulos didn't know what he was talking about, so he was very poorly briefed or prepared himself very poorly for what he said. But what made it, I think, even more comical for people like me and many others, and by the way, I would recommend that if you can get your hands on Megyn Kelly, she has a program on the internet. but you can often pick up clips on the internet. And if you can listen to her analysis of this, and she went through the whole story of George Stephanopoulos and his history as a hitman for her, for Bill Clinton, going after women who were criticizing Bill Clinton, and went through the whole thing. It was really interesting. But that's who this guy George was. He was part of the team that would go out. If a woman came out accusing Bill Clinton, they would go out and destroy the woman, you know, and that was their job. So for George Stephanopoulos years later to become, or to start asking questions about supporting a politician who has, who's had problems. And by the way, one of the women who accused President Clinton, I think her name was Kathleen Willey, she was accusing him of rape. So, I mean, it wasn't just flirting around. You know, she was doing, he was doing a lot more than that, or at least the allegations were. So for George Stephanopoulos to take this position, it's kind of silly. And he came across as pretty silly. Now, nothing's going to happen to him at ABC News. But the reality is that these journalists need to be very careful, because they have a background, especially somebody like Stephanopoulos. Everybody remembers him as being on the Clinton team that would go after women. And that of course, made his whole presentation pretty pretty silly as well. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.